When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on episode 349 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Cadillac Lyriq, the BMW i5, Nissan Altima. Will Apple and Rivian hook up? Got potential tariffs on Chinese EVs. Quarter of F-150s are now hybrids. More on EV charging. A trailer for a new Cadillac racing movie. And ZF Demo Day. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 349 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abul-Samich from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from CarBuzz.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
Woohoo, all three.
For everywhere you want to be.
Welcome back, Robbie. How was Japan?
Japan was awesome. I was sad because I tried to set up, there's this thing called, no, this isn't it. I can't find it. Anyway, Honda has like a car, like sharing system. You know, you drive around for an hour, like Zipcar.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in a city that has Zipcar. And I really tried to set it up so I could do that. I didn't want to like get a car in Japan and then drive around, like go place, because it's very expensive
to
drive
in Japan.
It's extremely expensive. Like the tolls are crazy. It's a lot. But what I did want to do was get like a little car that has a like a set parking spot and then just drive it around for like an hour or two in the neighborhoods,
yeah,
you know, on surface streets where I wasn't going to have tolls, just to say I did it. And I went through the whole thing. It was all in Japanese until I got to the one part and it's like, oh, we don't accept non-Japanese licenses or international driving permits. I was like, no.
Bummer.
No. So I just drove, you know, trains. I drove super train, bullet train. And
that's probably the better way to get around Japan.
Anyway. It is. Don't go to Japan and like rent a car and drive around. That's a fool's errand.
Yeah.
But I did, like I said, I just wanted to drive around the neighborhoods, like without getting on the freeway or any expressway or going over any bridges, because it would have bankrupted me. But it didn't really work. So, but I did, you know, we walked around, we took the public transportation is really good. Took the bullet train to Kyoto, and that was fun. Went by Mount Fuji.
Ooh, nice.
Or Mount Fuji, sorry. Fuji's a whole other place. Mount Fuji.
Fuji, close enough.
Yeah. We flew past Fiji on the way there. How's that? So, no, we had a great time. Japan's awesome. If you are looking to travel somewhere that's really inexpensive right now, that's Japan, because the yen is very, very weak. Of course, it's going to cost you a lot of money to get there. But yeah, once you're there, you can get a lot for very little money. So if you're like me and you're just kind of, you don't really like do a lot of fancy things when you go on vacation, you just kind of cruise around and see people and see how people live and enjoy yourself and eat food from whatever random street vendor happens to be nearby, you're going to have the best.
Or you have yummy random shop food? Did you enjoy
little shops? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was when I was there, when I was in Japan in October, I had arrived, I was in Korea the week before, and I flew over to Tokyo, and I had about a day and a half before the rest of the group that Nissan was hosting for the Japan Mobility Show started to arrive. And so I had a full day. And so, you know, I just grabbed my laptop and walked down the road from the hotel, found a coffee shop to work at for a couple hours and wandered around and found a great little noodle shop and had some lunch there. It was great.
And it cost you like $5 American, maybe.
I think it was about $7.
$7. We would go out to dinner.
Really good ramen.
We would go out to dinner and it'd be like $18.
Yeah.
Like really, really good, nice food. And it'd be like 18. We went to this really nice Wagyu, like barbecue place where you barbecue the food, and I had like 10 different types of meat coming out, plus like 7 other things happening, and then my wife ordered a couple of things on the cart and shared some of my food, and we had our own little special room where they open and close the door and brought us things. And it was very, very fancy. And it cost us a grand total of $96.
Wow. That's
that's a $250-$300 meal.
Yeah.
And I was just like, every time we would get our bill, I just started laughing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So plus 7-Eleven in Asia. Awesome.
And you know, if you like to get your coffee out of in cans out of vending machines, you're all set. Boom.
There's
you're
that set. Too. There's
they set. Are like about every 20 feet, there's a vending machine.
Vending machine. Yeah. Boss coffee. Yeah. Anyway, Japan was great. Go visit Japan. Especially now if you can swing it.
Yeah. All right. Nicole?
Yeah. What
have you been driving?
I had a lot of things to drive this week. I have one that I'm going to talk about next week that's sitting in my driveway now, and you're just going to have to wait on that one. But it's
no, been I want to know. What is it?
You're going to have to wait till next week, but let's just say it's been interesting.
You can't even tell us what it is?
I'll tell you what it is. So next week I'm going to tell you whether the Chevy Blazer EV actually makes it to the end of my loan period. But
oh dear.
yeah. So well that's still a giant question mark from my point of view. So but what I did make all the way through the loan that I was scheduled for was the Nissan Altima, which I'm pretty sure I didn't talk about yet. Have we talked? I don't have it on my mind. I didn't think so. So I have
last week you talked about the Suburban.
That's what I thought. So we're gonna talk about the Altima and we'll save the fate of the Chevy Blazer EV for next week's episode. Been great. So the Altima, like the thing is with this car, I wrote a story about the Altima that, like, you know what? People aren't excited about sedans because they're just sedans, right? Like, and the Altima isn't like this super sporty performance vehicle. There's nothing to make you think, like, oh man, I don't think many people are walking around going, you know what? I have always wanted an Altima. I have my life goal here. I have my Altima. That's not how it works. Like, people aren't doing that. And because no one is saying that, it kind of gets knocked. It's like an Altima. But I really enjoyed driving this. And the thing is, what made it fun, so there's two different powertrains for this. So you can get either, I just lost the specs, my screen refreshed. So you have a 2-liter four-cylinder engine that has 188 horsepower and 180 pound-feet, or blah, blah, blah. A 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder with 248 horsepower and 273 pound-feet of torque. You take a little mileage hit, like a little fuel economy hit, like barely. It's like a little bit less on combined. But the difference, like, I think it's important when you get a sedan, like, to know sometimes, like, this is not about being a performance vehicle. It's not about getting you there fastest. You are winning no races in your Altima. But
so this is not an Altima Nismo.
No, it is not. This is the car you buy when you want a nice, solid, comfortable, roomy sedan. You want decent fuel economy and you buy it with the turbo because you want it to be nice to drive. You want to like driving it. Like it's not always just about the numbers that I just rattled off. Like the numbers make a difference, but what it is what you feel when you drive it. Like you drive this one with this powertrain. And when you mash the gas pedal, it gets out of its own way. You don't have to worry about merging into traffic and feeling like the tractor trailer behind you is going to end up in your backseat. You have enough power left over when you're in rush hour traffic and the guy in front of you is driving like a snail to zip out into the left-hand lane, mash it, pass him, and get back into the lane you want to be in. It's really nice because it gives you just enough performance. You don't have to be a gearhead. You don't have to be a performance-focused person who wants to, like, just drive crazy. It's not about that. It's just about having a car that makes you feel happy and confident and that's comfortable to drive. I really like the Altima. I feel like people are just kind of like, meh. I enjoyed driving this car. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with it. And it was roomy. The kids were sitting in the back seat. Kit was not squished. That's always a plus one when she's like, not like, because here's how you know if the car is really too small. I'm 5'6", Russ is 6'3". If Kit goes to sit behind whatever seat Russ was just in and is like, oh no, Dad was in this, and like goes around to the other side of the car to sit behind me, like, you know, it's too small. Because if he pushes the seat back, that's my automatic measure of there is not enough room for tall people in here. She didn't have to do that in this. She sat on both sides of it and it was no problem. So
see, that's the magic of sedans.
The magic of sedans. So I really like this. I just think the Altima is a good car that I think weirdly is sort of just, it's just kind of overlooked. But I think it's a great vehicle. I enjoy driving it and I recommend it. And I would absolutely make sure, though, that spring Ford, if you can, get the higher trim so that you can get the turbocharged engine and you can enjoy yourself a little bit. And you can still have like the responsible grown-up car that you're supposed to have without being feeling like you've like, oh, I hate being a grown-up. I don't want to be a grown-up. You don't mind being a grown-up in the Altima.
I don't know. I still kind of hate it. I don't care what car I'm in, but
you hate it? Oh, you hate being a grown up.
Oh,
well, no, the car's fine.
About that,
I haven't driven the car. I don't know. I believe you that it's a nice sedan.
It's 36,000. It's not 36 grand. So it's the with the turbocharged one, you're at the top of the lineup, and it's like $36,000. So you're getting a sedan that is nice to drive, is comfortable, has all the key features, has a pretty interior that it looks nice. Doesn't feel like you cheaped out. 36 grand. Not crazy. And I think that comes in under the average price. Isn't the average price right now like $40,000 or something stupid like that?
It's still about 47,000.
47. So this is a steal.
Yeah. So that turbo engine is the same variable compression turbo that they have in the Infiniti QX55 that I drove a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things I noticed when I drove the Infiniti was when it was like in its normal or tour mode, whatever the standard drive mode is.
Yeah.
That sometimes when you go to accelerate, you know, there was some lag before it started to really go. If I put it in sport mode, there was no lag, but in normal mode, you know, there'd be a little delay before it started to respond and really accelerate. Did you ever notice that at all in the Altima?
I didn't actually experience that. I played around with it mostly, and I'm forgetting the modes now because you said mode names and I can't remember what they were called, the Altima, but I didn't find that it lagged. Like I said, this isn't like a race car-y kind of reaction time, but I didn't feel like I hit the gas and sort of did that, like, where are you? Join me in going. It didn't do that. It actually was responsive. So I didn't feel like I had any kind of delayed response where it was lagging a little bit behind what I wanted it to do. I felt like it was right there with me.
Okay. That's good. So, I mean, maybe they've tuned it slightly differently.
I mean, I was just going to say, maybe there's some little tune. You never know between the two, you know, one's an Infiniti, one's a Nissan, slight little different tuning thing here could have made all the difference. And slightly different vehicles, you never know. But yeah, no, I didn't experience that. I thought it was lovely.
Or was one yours, of you is lying.
was yours front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive? I don't know if they have the all-wheel drive with the turbo.
No, it was front-wheel drive because they don't do all-wheel drive with the turbo. So it was it's front-wheel drive only. But again, you're not off-roading in this. You don't need all-wheel drive.
I know.
Put winter tires on there.
It's just always a really weird decision when they do stuff like that. Like the Mazda 3 is like, you can get a manual transmission with the front wheel drive, but all wheel drive you can't. You're just like, what?
It's
and the
strange.
CEO is like, that's not what people want. And I was like, I don't think you've been talking to people.
You're talking to the wrong people.
Don't you always wonder that though? Because you know somewhere there's a guy.
There's data somewhere.
It has data everywhere. And he's like, the data says. And you're like, really? Because my brain says that's
the take rate for all-wheel drive. Because people buy all-wheel drive because they immediately assume it's safer. So I think more people are buying the all-wheel drive. And those people are less likely. Those are the regular masses. And they're less likely to buy a manual transmission vehicle.
Yes, the overlap in the Venn diagram for the people who want all-wheel drive and the sporty car because they're really focused on safety.
It's kind of like two tangent circles. You know, they're just touching. So there's like one person.
Barely. So that one guy. Well,
it's like every automotive journalist.
Yeah.
And then like the kids who buy BRZs.
Yeah.
And then everybody else wants an automatic all-wheel drive.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah. So
we understand why it still makes our sads.
Yeah.
It does.
You know, it's the same group that want to buy, you know, brown diesel station wagons or, you know, manual transmission Cadillac CTSV wagons. But you know, unfortunately, that group can't afford the Cadillacs most of the time.
Yeah, so. We all got really excited about the V60s and the V90s.
Yeah,
and then none of us could afford to buy a V60 or V90, and then they like, well.
Yeah,
it's just like we tried. We did the thing you asked.
We offered it. You journalists didn't buy it?
We all loved it. We all talked about how much we love it. Yeah. And then the people were like, we all just, nope.
Just give me the crossover. Yeah.
Just give us the,
All right. What about you, Robbie? What have you been in?
Oh, what did I drive? Hold on. Let me pull it back up. I drove like
when you weren't flying along in bullet trains.
When I wasn't doing 120 miles an hour across the Japanese countryside. Before that, I drove the 2024 BMW i5 M60. This is the fourth electric since this. So yeah, the i4, iX, i7, i5. There we go. The fourth one. It's fantastic. Like the other three. You're just like, oh, it's a little bit bigger than the i4, not nearly as fancy as the i7. That's where it is. It's like the Goldilocks car. Like you're like, well, I want a little bit more room and I still want to go fast, but I'm definitely not fancy enough for an i7 with a drop down screen and, you know, a giant front. I really like this car. I think BMW, I'll say it again. I think it took a little while for people to realize how well Hyundai was doing in the EV space, and everyone who knows, we're all like, yeah, Hyundai's making great EVs. And then like a year and a half later, like, you know, New York Times or Washington Post are like, hey, did you guys know Hyundai's making EVs? Right. All right, guys. I think it's the same thing what's going on with BMW, to be honest. I think they're making, I know the packaging, you know, you still have the hump for the tunnel for the transmission that doesn't exist. But when you get in the vehicles and you're driving around, they're really, really nice. You know, they've done a really great job at making the best version of every series of four series of cars be the EV. The best four series is the i4. The best five series is now the i5. They're smooth. They're quick. I had the M60, so it was a little extra quick. I had a little extra something in there. Let me get the where are these numbers at? Did I even write them down? Probably not.
I've been on vacation. Some horsepower, I think.
Yeah, it's some crazy amount of horsepower. It's enough. Let's just say that. It's enough to get you around. It's more than adequate. There you go. It's more than adequate. And it feels extremely solid. It doesn't feel like you're like hitting it and it's just like a wiggly beast like you're trying to tame. It's just like you're hitting it. It's like a mighty dragon that's just like boom, eating everything in its way.
A mighty dragon.
Burning and killing and eating its fallen enemies, all wheel drives. It's really fun. I enjoy it. It has 240 miles of range. I did, you know, based on my driving, I was saying, yeah, that sounds about right. I wasn't unable to do my loop. So I can't say definitively that it's going to be correct, but every time I've done any of the BMW ranges, they always beat it by a few miles. So I don't see why this one would be any different, because the M60, it's 240. You'll probably get some more if you get just a regular i5. And really, to be honest, you'd be more than happy with the regular i5. The M60 is a lot. It also means you have 21 inch, wheels, which, like, oh my god, come on guys, 20, let's make it,
let's shrink them down just a little,
just a scooch, just 8 to 20s, some 19s, 18 17s, let's put some 17s on there. lots of sidewall.
It's 593 horsepower, by the way.
500, thank you very much. 593 magical horsepower. Again, I love to point out that BMW, their motors don't have rare earth magnets. And I remember when they announced that a while ago at a test fest, I got a text message from a different OEM. How is BMW doing this? I'm like, are they really doing this? How are they doing this? And I said, yeah, they're doing it. I don't know. I don't work at BMW. But everyone thought, you know, if you're not using a rare earth magnet, if you're using, like, you know, essentially just making a magnet electrically, you're going to lose out on efficiency. You're going to lose out on performance. And BMW is not losing out on either of those. They're actually quite efficient for what they are. They actually have quite a lot of performance. So they're little engineering marvels is what they are. So kudos to them on that. Again, like Hyundai, I think, you know, I'm sure there'll be a Wall Street Journal article in like 2 months and be like, did you know that BMW is making really great EVs?
And they're selling really well.
It's almost like a little secret. And I see them everywhere. I'm seeing more and more of these BMW EVs all over the place because the front's a little bit different, but it's not so much so different that I think the average person realizes what's going on. And I think that probably is helping them. I think it's helping them a lot more than sort of like having a completely different design philosophy like Mercedes has with their EQS vehicles. So I think it kind of worked out for them. And, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago or whatever, when they told us they were going to do their modular manufacturing at their factories where you could do gas, hybrid, and EVs. And then we all drove the i3 and we all drove the i8 and then nothing happened for years. And I I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what's going on over there. And then, you know, you got into the i4, a few years ago, and you're like, oh, they did do it. They actually did it. They didn't, this wasn't like, hey, we're going to do this cool thing. And then it just sort of like disappeared and we forgot about it. They actually did the thing they said they were going to do. And I'm really looking forward to the Neue Klasse.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
You know, I have to acknowledge, you know, a couple of years ago when they revealed the new 7 Series in New York, I went to the event that they did in New York, and I sat in a roundtable session with Oliver Zipse, who's the CEO of BMW Group. And, you know, I asked him a question. I was kind of critical of the fact that, you know, BMW was launching these new EVs using a flexible platform, instead of having a dedicated EV platform, you know, which ideally would have been, you know, a little better packaging, a little more efficient. You know, why do you have the transmission tunnel, the drive shaft tunnel in a car with no drive shaft? But, you know, I was wrong. I'll admit it. I was wrong.
I think we were all like, oh. These are going to be half-assed. Yes, we all thought they were going to be half-assed, and then they weren't.
There is a little bit of packaging deficiency because you still have the drive shaft tunnel in there, and you know, even though you have a fairly long hood area, you know, none of these cars have a frunk. But aside from that, you know, these things are fantastic to drive. They drive like BMWs. They're remarkably efficient. You know, they're way more efficient than pretty much anything else in their class in terms of their energy efficiency and the amount of range they can get out of the amount of battery they put in these vehicles.
Yeah.
They actually did a really amazing job. And I too am really looking forward to see what they do with the Neue Klasse, you know, to taking it, you know, the next level, the next generation of their electric drive modules, their new batteries, their new electronics. It's, you know, and, you know, from what we've seen of the Neue Klasse, you know, with the two concepts now, the sedan and the Vision X that they, we saw in LA a few weeks ago, I think those vehicles are going to do great.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, the price for this vehicle, without all the fancy bits, starts at $84,100. That's for the M60. And then there's just a bunch of like dynamic handling, 3,600 driver's assistance pro with the highway assist. That's the hands-free under 40 miles an hour thing. 2,000 premium, 2,000 blah, blah, blah. By the end of the day, after they added all the little fun bits, $97,095. So it's not cheap.
Yeah.
I think you would probably be happy with just the regular i5. I don't think you need all the stuff. Driver's assistance pro, $2,000. If you are in traffic a lot, I find myself using driver's assistance less and less, you know, as time goes on. I do it to test it out, but I don't. Once I tested it, I, you know, if I'm in really, really tough traffic, I'll turn on I'll turn it on. But for the most part, I end up turning a lot of this stuff off at this point. And I'm the tech guy. That's my job, is to like know all this stuff. So I know it all. I know how it all works. But when I'm driving, I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm driving. Because I don't, again, where do I put my hands?
Yeah.
Gonna hold.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah.
Just hold them up so the people driving beside you can say, hey.
Look. I'm doing jazz hands.
And possibly panic. Like, is that guy really not driving? Is the car driving? What's happening? Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, what do I do? It's Talladega Nights. I don't know what to do with my hands.
But yeah, I agree with you.
I end up just putting them on. I put them on the wheel because that's where they go.
Yeah. I got to drive the i5 at Test Fest in November in Spartanburg. And then, last year driving the i4, I drove both the rear wheel drive and the M50 versions of the i4. And while the M50 is great, the standard rear wheel drive version is virtually as good. And, it's a lot less money.
I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. No, like yeah, you're right.
The Polestar, there's the all-wheel drive and then the rear-wheel drive. Rear-wheel drive one's funner.
Yeah.
A lot more fun. Funner is not a word, I don't think. Funner. It's a lot more fun. Rear-wheel drive.
A lot funner. I like it. Funner.
A lot it's funner. Funner. It's funner. So, yeah, that's the 2024 BMW i5 M60 X-Drive Sedan.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
All right. Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying for my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's ExpressVPN.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. ExpressVPN.com/wheelbearings.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheelbearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. Well, I had a cousin of the car that you have in the driveway right now, Nicole. I had the Cadillac Lyric. I had the Cadillac Lyric, the 2024 okay. Cadillac Lyric, and it worked for an entire week. No software crashes.
I saw two of them on Saturday on the way to go visit family, driving on the road, just driving along.
Yeah, they're actually starting to ship them now to customers. Yeah. You know, people taking delivery of them, and you know, they finally got them in the press fleet here, and you know, this came almost exactly 2 years after we did the first drive.
Oh my God, was that in Colorado?
It was in Park City.
It was in June of 2022. I remember they're like, well, the infotainment system's still a little wonky. We're like, all right, you know.
Yeah, it was a lot wonky.
It was, you like pushed a button. You're like, okay, don't do anything with that. But it drove like nice. I liked it.
Yeah. No.
Two years ago.
Yeah, they fixed all the software issues I had 2 years ago. The Super Cruise works. You know, the infotainment system worked fine. You know, they made an interesting change, you know, because the ones we drove 2 years ago were 2023 models. So the first batch were all 23s. And then sometime last fall, they switched over to the 2024 models. And they made an unusual change that you wouldn't normally see after just one model year. They fundamentally changed the door handles on the Lyric, because the originally, you know, it, when you looked at the Lyric, you know, it had what appeared to be chrome door handles, you know, that were mounted flush with the door, you know, so they weren't sticking out. You figure, oh, okay, you know, it's going to be like a Tesla or something, you know, that as I press the button, you know, they're going to pop out, but they never pop out. And the way it worked was you pressed what looked like a door handle, and then it had the piston in the door, just like the Mustang Mach-E, that would pop the door out a couple of inches, and then you pull the door open. It had the exact same mechanism.
So long ago.
Yeah. And I think, you know, probably the early customers, you know, got confused. It's like, well, why doesn't this door handle pop out? You know, why does the whole door pop out without the door handle? And so they actually changed it for 2024. And so they went back to something more traditional. So now, you know, it looks exactly the same when it's closed, when the door's locked. But then when you unlock it, it pops out, it pivots out from the rear end. So it's basically like the same type of door handles you find on, you know, the Hyundais and Kias, where, you know, it pops out and you just grab the door handle and pull the door open. And I think, you know, for most people, especially probably for customers that are buying something like the Lyric, you know, they're going to be less confused by this system. So that was fine.
How much of a hit did they get when they just have the door handles flush, but it has a little hole underneath where your hand goes in and you open it? Like, how much of a drag coefficient hit do you think a car gets when you have that?
Not a lot, but
I feel like it's not enough to matter.
Yeah.
Probably, I think the answer is not enough to matter. Can we just have those?
Yeah.
Can we just have regular human? I put my hand in. I kind of like if a firefighter comes to my car.
Like on that 5 series, you know, I've got a 530i in the driveway right now.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it has. You know, it's got the little pocket. You just stick your hand in it, pull it, handles. The door opens.
Yeah.
But they decided that's not what they wanted. They wanted something that looked even sleeker. You know, I like the design of the Lyric. You know, I think it's an interesting design. You know, it's larger than you expect it to be, even though it's only a 2-row crossover. You know, but it's the same size as the Blazer. So, you know, it almost, you know, except for the way it looks, everything about it is almost exactly the same as the Blazer. You know, so it's got the same rear motor, you know, so if you get the rear drive version, it's the same 340 horsepower rear motor, same 102 kilowatt hour battery pack. Almost exactly the same dimensions. It's like less than an inch difference in overall length and width and everything. It is a little on the wider side relative to what I'd want. You know, the interior is really nice. One thing I hadn't noticed when I drove it 2 years ago, or at least I'd forgotten about it if I had noticed.
I feel like you've forgotten.
Yeah, probably. is the center console is kind of cantilevered out. And there's a storage area underneath there. And something I noticed when I was when I had it for a week and was driving it was, you know, when I put my hand on it, you know, or, you know, when I like went for the cup holders, I could feel that the whole thing felt kind of hollow.
I was playing drums on it. You just reminded me of that.
Yeah. So that whole center console area just feels hollow. And, you know, if you tap on it, it feels kind of cheap. Mm. It doesn't have that solid feeling you expect of a luxury car.
Yeah. Which I remember, you know, that now.
Slightly disappointing. But, you know, I mean, the screen, you know, is 33-inch, you know, curved display, looked fantastic. You know, the infotainment system worked really well. It's an Android Automotive, you know, Google services system. You know, the instrument cluster, on the far left-hand side, you got another little touch area that you can toggle between, you know, showing things like the energy efficiency, getting some of the settings. You can toggle the display modes for the cluster, so you can go between normal instruments. You can have the map display up there for navigation. No heads up display in the Lyric. And you know, there's a few other options for what you can have on there. Or you can have just a nice, quiet, simplified display that minimizes the information that's there. Driving it, you know, was really nice to drive, you know, just like when I drove the rear wheel drive Blazer in December. And when I drove the Lyric 2 years ago, I liked driving it. You know, it's got good performance, 340 horsepower, you know, rear wheel drive, you know, so it feels pretty good for the type of vehicle that it is. The one I was on was the Luxury 3 trim. So kind of the top end loaded model, had pretty much almost everything except for the all wheel drive option, which bumps that from 340 to 500 horsepower. But everything else was there. The interior, I forget the name of the interior color. They call it Oxford Stone. It was sort of a sandstone kind of color to it. Not like a deep brown, but, you know, sort of a lighter tan color, you know, Nappa leather, looked really nice. One thing that surprised me was the exterior color, it's a pale blue, almost like a baby blue, but even lighter. They call it Nimbus Metallic.
Nimbus.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
He controls the police.
The Fleet website, you know, when I was going through and entering stuff on my calendar, you know, when I had which cars, you know, I looked at the page for the Lyric, and it actually, in the photos that were posted on the site, it almost looked white. And when I saw it, you know, when I went to swap another car a few weeks ago, when I saw it in the shop, it looked almost white. But then in the sun, you can see that it's actually like this really light blue, which is pretty, you know, it's an attractive color. Wouldn't be my first choice. I would go with the opulent blue metallic, which is a darker, richer blue color. But you know, it's different. You know, so it's something a little unusual. There's also a really nice green that they call Emerald Lake Metallic, which is also a pretty awesome color. But overall, really like driving it. You know, it's got 314 miles of range. I didn't do a full range test to run it down, but I drove it for a couple of hours. You know, drove out to Jackson, Michigan, and back to run down the battery a bit, to check it out on the local supercharger station that has Magic Docks. And I took it over there, plugged it in. It was charging on the supercharger, you know, from 35% state of charge. You know, plugged it in, and it immediately went to like 186 kilowatts. So it charges pretty fast. The back seat is very roomy. One of the advantages, you know, having a car with 121-inch wheelbase and only two rows is the back seat is going to be very roomy, and you still have lots of cargo space in the back as well. So you don't really need a frunk in this thing. It's overall, I like the Lyric. And you know, the base model starts at like 58,000 and change. The, The luxury trim starts at about 63,000. And let's see, get the right Monroney here. The one that I had, what is it pulling up? No, that's not, I didn't have the XT4. Sure? They've got it linked to the wrong one. Anyway, the one that I had was about $73,000 all in. And that's pretty much loaded except for, like I said, all-wheel drive. It had almost all the other options, including Super Cruise. And I spent some time using Super Cruise. I had to drive to Detroit for an event. And from getting on the freeway, getting on the interstate near right by my house, set Super Cruise, and I went hands-free all the way until the exit when I got off in Detroit.
What did you do with your hands? Coming
back. I just prefer not to talk the whole time in public.
Oh, okay. Well, now I don't. I'm never going to ask you that question again. But I'm also going to think about it every time you talk about Super Cruise. You're like, Super Cruise is great. And I'm like,
I had them in my lap just below the steering wheel so that I could grab the wheel at any moment because I don't entirely trust these systems. But Super Cruise is still the best of these systems. But you know, like I said, I don't feel entirely comfortable with any of them.
Yeah. Mm. I put my hands on my I feel like a well-mannered school like child, like a schoolboy just sitting there, and then I just like, oh, I'm just gonna put them on my thing. I just rest them on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
That kind of defeats, I guess, the purpose of the whole system.
But you know, it's got the Google services built in there, so as usual, you know, I just log into my Google account. Download Pocket Cast, download all my podcasts, get my music in there. If you are a Waze user, you can use Waze in there as well as an alternative to Google Maps. So the only thing you don't get is Apple Maps. Although the Lyric does still have support for CarPlay. Plugged in an iPhone. So if you're an iPhone user and you want to use that, you still have the option to use that. Nice. The Blazer, of course, does not have that option. But the Lyric still does for now, at least. At some point they may take it out or they may not. We'll see.
I after Google like laid off a ton of people, weirdly, Google Maps not great. I'm just like, what is happening? I just started using Apple Maps a lot more, and it seems to be doing. I remember back in the day, Apple Maps was trash. It was just horrible when it launched.
Was awful.
Like I think people got in trouble. Someone got fired, I think, because of the launch.
I remember trying to get someplace, and literally, it was like this warehouse type area I was in. It's like, you have arrived, and I was at like a pond retaining sewage or something. I'm like, this is not where I want to be. What are you doing?
I was going,
you have arrived there.
I know. I had arrived. And I'm like, I have arrived, but not where I want to be. Why am I at some sewage, stinky sewage thing? I had to it was awful. I wasn't even close. It was off by like a mile and a half.
I've started using it more and more. And a lot of cars support the turn by turn directions. So you'll use it. And also the car itself will also give you the turn by turn directions, like in the head up display and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started using it, and oh yeah. By the way, if you're in Japan, Google Maps won't be great.
No.
Apple Maps is better.
Yeah,
it's not. If you just because you want to find the subway station at its actual location, maybe you don't use Google Maps. It's like it's here, and I'm like it was four blocks away. And it just kept coming up with these weird things or this insane route for my wife and I to go back to our hotel one night. It was just like, why do I keep, it's just muscle memory from decades of using Google Maps. And I'm just like, I got to stop.
It worked fine when I used it in October. So maybe they broke something since then, or maybe it's just where I was or where you were. Yeah.
I don't know. It was just really, I don't know what it was doing.
Yeah. But to your comments about wheels being too large, that is one other complaint about the Lyric that I had. It had 22-inch wheels on it.
Why?
Which, you know, it's like,
I mean, I know why. It looks cool, but yeah. Come on.
But they have 20s that look really good too.
in Detroit. I always everyone makes fun of the roads in Detroit. And I'm always like, haha, yeah, the roads in Detroit are horrible. And then I go to Detroit and I'm like, oh my God, what is happening in this state?
That's why so many people here drive trucks and SUVs. Yep.
You have to. You need off-road tires. You need 35-inch. You need big, giant, knobby off-road tires to drive around that state.
Yeah, like, I was very careful with the Lyric to make sure to avoid any potholes because not a lot of sidewall with those 22-inch wheels.
Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting this weekend. Finally, gonna get to drive the new Silverado EV RST, ooh, which has 24-inch wheels. On a 9,000-pound
bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's just ridiculous.
I gotta reach out to them about that truck.
Your big wheel.
I just keep forgetting. Sorry. I swear I'll reach out to you, GM.
All right. So that's the Cadillac Lyric, $73,000 as tested. All right. Let's move on to some other stuff. So speaking of Apple, we talked previously about them canceling their car project, but apparently they're not completely giving up on the whole car thing. There's reports now that they are looking to partner with Rivian, and RJ Scaringe was asked about that and said can't talk about any details, but we're talking. So what do you think that Apple and Rivian might do together, considering that the Rivian currently does not support any of either CarPlay or Android Auto? They do all their software in-house themselves. What would Apple and Rivian do together?
As the Patagonia of EVs, Rivian, the Venn diagram of Rivian owners with Apple with iPhones is like it's just one circle. So yeah, any deal what they do with Apple probably makes sense. I hope they don't get rid of the little Yeti dude, with the little headband and the little sweater. but they might, I don't know if they'll do the complete takeover. That Apple's like, hey, we could do a complete takeover, and every automaker is like, nah, man, that's not going to happen. you can have your little infotainment screen, but you're not getting a complete takeover.
And it's so cute. I don't want to give up all the Rivian stuff to become Apple.
Yeah.
Stuff.
They might be working on an OS like Android OS or Android Automotive. So they might be, putting something that would reduce the amount of work that Rivian has to do on their machines right now. So,
but Rivian's always been pretty intent on doing that, making it clear that they feel that that's something that they should be doing themselves.
Yeah, but feel like and paying for. I mean, everyone's on top of something. They're on top of Unix. They're on top of QNX. They're on top of Android Automotive. They're on top of, something. So maybe Apple is like, hey, we can be for your stack, we can be the base layer. We're going to have all these things you can plug into based on all of our autonomous vehicle working that we've been doing. And then we realize that cars don't have the same profit margins as phones. So, it might be something to that effect. Or it's just that they're going to get CarPlay and RJ's like, hey, yeah, we're working with Apple. Ha, ha, ha.
It could be something that simple. I wonder if it literally is that simple.
It's just CarPlay. We're just looking way too deep into this.
Or what about, having Apple do the ADAS for, the R2 and the R3? Because Rivian's done that themselves on the R1. But, Apple did a lot of work on that, as part of the car project. They were trying to develop fully automated driving, and they were, then before they killed the project, there was reports that they had scaled back to, doing, ADAS, doing hands-free driver assist systems like Super Cruise. Do you think that
I could see that. It's that ADAS stuff and the autonomous, it's super expensive. Not even Uber with its like big pile of VC money decided that, they killed that because they're like, oh, this is entirely too much money. What are we doing? If you have a partner who already has it and who you can plug your stuff into. That's great for Rivian. Again, they're still a really small company, and ADAS is really expensive. Yeah. It's a lot of work. And everyone's like, well, they're not doing this. They're doing AI now. Well, AI is essentially in car ADAS is essentially AI.
Yeah.
It's always been AI. It's just, the only person who really talked about it was George Hotz. He's like, the reason he got into this, level 3 autonomy with his vehicles, or level 2.5, because it was the only thing he found that had AI that he found exciting.
Yeah.
That's it. Not because he really loves cars. He's like, oh, it was really exciting what they were doing with ADA, with AI. So that's why I'm doing it, because nothing else is doing it. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a potential for ADAS for them. There's potential. Again, it could just be CarPlay. But
I bet it's just CarPlay.
I don't think they're going to give up like their sort of their goofiness that they have in their cars, which is sort of delightful. And they have a dog mode, every car should have dog mode as far as I'm concerned. If you have an EV and you don't have dog mode, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's so easy to do.
Come on.
Yeah, it's just
because if I'm walking the dog and it's hot, like it's been really well, it's been like 80 to me, it's hot. And we're walking back to the car, like 10 minutes before we get the car, I'll like get on the little Hyundai app and I'll turn on the air conditioning. So when we get in the car, the dogs will be nice and comfortable. It won't be a hot car. But if I had to go pick up a pie, so I just had to run in and grab it and come out while the dogs are in the car. I just left the car on. I got out of it, locked the door. The car's all beeping at me because the key's not in. Yeah. I'm trying to hurry before the car turns itself off. Yeah, we just need a dog mode in every car.
Yeah, no, that should absolutely be a default in all EVs. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of EVs, there's been a lot of consternation in the auto industry of late. Chinese automakers coming in and taking the market away from them the way the Koreans did before and the Japanese before that. In the 1970s and 80s. And we're recording this on Monday night, May 13th. By the time people hear this, there will probably already have been an announcement from the White House that it sounds like the Biden administration is going to increase the tariff on Chinese EVs from the current 27% to 100%.
Oof.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
In case you were wondering.
That's a big, that's all of it. That's the
that's
high.
A large, that's large.
Doubling the price.
You're doubling the price of your, and it. All right. So on one hand.
Robbie's like, all right, roll up your sleeves.
All right. On one hand, I want, American auto workers to make money. I don't want them to be put out of job because China is like incredibly subsidized these companies far mm-hmm. more than people might know, but also China is like 10 years ahead of us in EV battery technology. I'm sorry, that's just a fact. It's because they've done all, they're like, our air quality is trash, let's do something. It was really, really bad. Like if you went to Korea, you were just like, you got horrible air quality because of China.
Oh, it was
So they, as a country, they had to do that for the good of their people. I think, but also like these $10,000 BYD seagulls that everyone on TikTok is like jumping around and like, why can't we get this $10,000 car in America? I'm like, well, first of all, there's a lot of reasons why that vehicle, if you brought the BYD seagull over to America and it had to do homologation in order to meet all US standards, it'd be like a $23,000, $25,000, $27,000 car. It would not be $10,000. Like if you look in the Mexico version, it's like $21,000. It's not $10,000. Like it is
easy
in China.
To just like take car A from one country and bring it to the other country. It's like, no, there's rules and stuff.
Is really hurting is it's potentially hurting Polestar, Volvo, and Mini of all companies, because all three of those made in China.
Yeah, well, Polestar, the Polestar 2 is made in China, but the Polestar 3 is currently in production in China, but it's going to be produced in South Carolina starting in a few months for the U.S. market. The many, you know, they're also going to be producing those in Europe. So, you know, we'll probably get one European sourced minis here.
Yeah. I think in 2025 or 2026 is when that factory opens. So it's going to, we're going to get the mini later than we thought, which is kind of a bummer.
Mm-hmm. And the Polestar 4, you know, they announced last fall that they're adding another assembly plant in South Korea for that. So right now they've been in production in China since December, but we're going to get Polestar 4s sourced initially from China, but by next year they'll be coming from South Korea.
I think they all saw what was coming.
Yeah.
I think they all looked at the political and are like, oh.
The other thing about the Seagull, you know, is it's rated, there's two different size battery packs. There's a 30 kilowatt hour and a 39 kilowatt hour. So they're rated at 190 and 252 miles of range on the Chinese light duty test cycle, which is notoriously optimistic. So realistically, that car is going to have maybe 110, 120 mile range for the base version, and you know, maybe 130, 140 for the other one, which means that even if they sold that thing, you know, for $15,000 or $20,000 here in the US, not that many people are actually going to buy it.
It's small. People, Americans don't buy small cars. We wanted the Chevy Bolt, and we did, and then they sold a bunch of them. That's what we want. We want a $25,000, $27,000 car. That's just like a little crossover that gets, you know, 250 miles. And gets around town, has enough room for all the stuff, does all the things you want to do around town. We had that car.
And they said no.
We're going to close that plant and retool it to build Silverado EVs.
We have changed our mind.
No. Hopefully, I mean, I'm fingers crossed and the new one comes out. It looks good. I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
It
looks goodish. It's good enough. It looks good. And GM's EVs are looking good. And again, no one ever cared about the Traverse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No one's ever been excited about the Traverse until they show the EV version. So, you know, you make it look nice. The Equinox? Oh, the Equinox. That's what it is. The Chevy. We forget the Traverse even exists. The Equinox. No one's ever cared about the Equinox. But, you know, if the Bolt comes out, $30,000, maybe $29,000, $30,000, it's going to cost more than the other one. Just
actually, it probably might not because they're going to use LFP batteries in it.
Ooh.
So
maybe when I get another $27,000 car.
Yeah, maybe even less. Maybe $25,000, $24,000.
Of course, the EV3s come. So who knows between that?
Yeah.
The EV3 might just show up and eat its lunch.
Probably.
Before it even comes back.
Yeah.
Oh, Chevy, you had it. Yeah. Didn't you?
But if you just not messed around, Chevy.
You could have just kept building them for another year, you know, until.
And then replaced it.
Yeah. Until you're ready.
Oh, wow. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want a car from China.
Yeah. It's
100%.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that. I'm just shocking. I'm like, really? This is our solution? Okay.
The American automakers are like, Hyundai's like, whatever, man, we're just gonna keep making cars.
Wait, we're fine with that. You do you guys. We don't care.
You do you. I feel like Hyundai is just like, yeah, you do you.
You guys have your.
We got this all figured out.
Yeah, we got it out over here in the corner. You just don't pay attention to us. You're fine. You're fine.
Just ignore us while we sell a bunch of cars.
So Ford. You know, they've been, you know, as they've been scaling back some of their EV production, you know, due to not being able to sell as many as they thought they were going to. You know, they cut orders for batteries from SK and LG for the Lightning and the Mach-E and the E-Transit. But when they had their earnings report a week or so ago, I think they lost in the first quarter something like $1.5 billion on the Model E division,
ouch,
which is the division that's responsible for electric vehicles. And so, of course, you know, some people are doing some math that is not entirely accurate or appropriate.
No?
inappropriate is what it is.
Yeah, so not entirely.
It's completely inappropriate. Ford's sort of lazy.
Ford's losing $100,000 on every EV they sell, which is not true. And the same thing is the case for Rivian, you know, with their earnings, you know, said, oh, Rivian's losing $38,000 on every R1 it sells.
Let's say the new Ford Bronco comes out. You sell all the R&D and all the marketing, all the money they spent for that Ford Bronco when it came out. The first year, every car probably cost them $40,000.
Yeah.
You know, below profit. Like, they, here's how much we made, plus we owe $40,000 in R&D and marketing and blah blah blah. That's the weird math that we're coming up with now for
you. Weird math.
Yeah, I mean, if you just looked at what the actual cost of the parts and the labor that went into producing those cars, yeah, Ford is probably losing money, almost certainly losing money on the Mach-E and the Lightning. Rivian is definitely losing money on every R1 they build. But they're not losing $40,000 per car. That's factoring in all kinds of other costs that are part of their overhead. You know, the cost of developing the R2, you know, the cost of building charging stations, the cost of building service centers, all these things, building factories, you know, Ford.
Jim Farley's podcast isn't free.
That's right.
Trip he drove wasn't, I'm sure that trip he took was probably cost a pretty penny.
Yeah. So, you know, all that adds up, and, you know, they're applying all this stuff that's not related to the actual cost of the vehicle. So, you know, the reality is Ford is probably losing maybe $5,000 or $10,000 per Lightning and Mach-E, not $100,000.
Which is crazy, because Hyundai is not losing money. They, like, you ask them, they tell you point blank, no, we're not. Are you losing money? No.
We're not.
And they've been telling that for like 2 years now at this point.
I know.
They're like, why would we, what are you talking about? They almost seem incredulous when you ask them.
But like, they're also selling a lot more of those cars than Ford is.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'm going to say that the F-150, best F-150 for the majority of F-150 owners. Mm-hmm. The problem is that market wants vroom, vroom, big truck.
Yeah. Well, they got big truck.
Again, Robbie, what does the market want?
Vroom, vroom, big truck.
Okay, just double check.
They're getting a big truck, just not so much vroom, vroom, but it's faster than any other F-150. The big thing is it's terrible at towing.
Yeah. Well, even without it's terrible at towing, I think that market is I don't think, yeah. I think Rivian was smart with the mid adventure market. Yeah. Those people are like, yeah, EVs, but people who are buying F-150 Lightnings, except for the folks who were buying them for fleets for $40,000, that never happened.
Yeah.
Or did happen for like a little while for a hot second.
Yeah.
Those people got a screaming deal. Yeah. But then now it's like, what, 65? You're like, well, or whatever the price is this week. Who knows?
I think
it's a great truck.
I think it's 50 grand for the standard range Lightning Pro. The XLT is about 62, 63, something like that.
And the thing is, it's a great truck. I really like the F-150 mm-hmm. Lightning. It's just that market doesn't want the F-150 Lightning. Vroom, vroom, big truck.
But apparently what the market does want is hybrid F-150s.
Woohoo.
Because Ford is now selling almost a quarter of all the F-150s it's building are now hybrids.
Which is crazy to think about that. That's a large amount.
Yeah. That's the kind of market share Toyota's getting on, you know, like the RAV4 hybrid and the Camry and Corolla hybrids. You know, they're doing about a quarter of their sales are hybrids now. So yeah, they're selling a ton of hybrids, which is probably the reason why they dropped the hybrid from the 2025 Explorer, because for whatever reason, people were not buying Explorer hybrids, but Ford said, okay, but they want F-150 hybrids, so we'll just take those hybrid units and put them in F-150s instead of Explorers.
What a weird company. Yeah. Like, what are they? Like, they're just like whack-a-mole with their customer base. I really think they made a mistake with the F-150, but I think, why wouldn't you want the Explorer? But other parts of their customer base are just like, you know, they're just like, I don't know, man.
Well, you know, maybe
everyone else is buying hybrids, but they're not buying, you know what? Put them in the F-150.
Maybe if they put Pro Power on board in the Explorer as well, so you could get, you know, 10 kilowatts of power out of an Explorer.
I do like that Pro Power on the F-150.
Yeah, it's pretty cool feature. Yeah. Well, And then charging, there was a big article in the Atlantic this week by Abigail Bassett, about charging, talked about some of the various challenges around charging. Last week we talked about, Elon firing the entire charging team at Tesla. And of course today, a week later, week and a half later, reports coming out that they started trying to hire those people back again.
I know somebody who went back. There's one of the main folks who went back.
You know someone who went back?
Probably with, I don't know them personally, but like one of the main dudes went back with them. But I'm sure there was a big pile of money. Yeah. There's a big pile of money that came with that. There's also like, I already know how to do this. It's sort of like, turnkey. But for a lot of those people, I'm sure they got snatched up by like EA.
Well, there were stories about everybody trying like, hey, woohoo, we got all Elon's people. Like other companies were thrilled.
Yeah, no, I mean it's a really good group. It's a really good, really smart group. You sort of spread that knowledge around the entire industry, which is great. Probably less great for, I'm sure when those things came out, Elon was like, oh no, oh man, I did a boo-boo. I better get all these people back as quickly as possible before they keep like
this did not
making everyone else's stuff
yeah.
better.
Yeah, this is not what I thought would happen.
Oh, I thought they would just disappear.
Well, and Tesla just opened up the supercharger network to Ford and Rivian EVs in the last month, they're able to use superchargers now, but all these other companies that did deals with Tesla to use the superchargers, like GM, like Stellantis and Rivian and everybody else, they're trying to get their stuff tested, get their software updates for their vehicles tested, and there's nobody at Tesla to answer their calls or reply to their emails.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And
you have to do that. It's not like gas. There has to be a software handshake. Like the charger has to recognize the car and the car has to recognize the charger. So the software has to talk. And then you're like, oh, I know you. You're the car that like they brought to the lab. And the car's like, hey, I know you. You're that charger that I went and visited at the lab. And then they make a little digital kiss and then they start charging.
A digital kiss.
That's all very technical. But if you have a PowerPoint you have to show to like a boss, be sure to say digital kiss.
Digital kiss. I'm making notes of that.
There's our title for the show. A little digital kiss.
It's a handshake, but it ends up with a little digital kiss, like a little smooch on the cheek.
Even though Ford and Rivian vehicles, got their software update to allow access to the superchargers, most drivers still need to get adapters to use the superchargers because there's still only about, 50 or so supercharger locations that have magic docks, like the one near me here. And apparently some Ford EV owners are already going on Reddit talking about delays in getting their adapters because the adapters that Ford and Rivian are distributing are actually being sourced from Tesla. Tesla is supplying those.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
So I'm guessing that Ford's purchasing people are already talking to some of the other companies that are some of the third party manufacturers that are building adapters to get get samples and get those tested and make those available to their customers as an alternative if they can't get more of the adapters from Tesla.
It's hard if you're a company. Automakers do not like instability at all. Mm-hmm. Any little itty bitty thing, they're just like, ah. And when your partners is like, hey, we fired everybody, you're like, wait, what? That's the thing we were working on together.
Like, didn't we have a deal? There was a kiss.
I thought we were cool, man. We were cool.
It was a little digital kiss.
Digital kiss. And now he's being coy.
Now this guy got up in the middle of the night and left.
Gave everyone mono.
Gave everyone mono.
Digital mono.
Okay.
Hopefully it gets all figured out.
Yeah, we mentioned some of the charging companies and stuff reaching out trying to hire the former supercharger team, but there's also these sites that Tesla was planning to build superchargers on. And, you know, other companies are trying to snap those up too, because, you know, they put up. So BP Pulse and Shell
Reaper. That's already there.
Well, the hardware is not necessarily there. You know, so supposedly what happened was, you know, they said any sites that are already in progress, where there's already construction work going on, we'll finish those. But any other sites that we haven't broken ground on yet, you know, we've got the site, but we haven't broken ground on, we're not moving forward with those right now.
But some of those already have the power there.
But they do have the power there. And so that's why BP Pulse, Shell Recharge, and Revel, the New York taxi company that has a fleet of Tesla Model Ys, they're trying to grab these sites and build their own put their own chargers in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's... Oh, it was such a bad idea.
Because that's one of the toughest parts about doing DC fast charging is actually getting the power there.
Yeah, because you got to deal with permitting and
utilities.
And power, utilities. And Tesla has a whole system set up. That's how they're able to get it through. And now that system is they've already done the work. And also, those people are now available.
Yeah.
To help you out. Just hire them all away.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Did either of you two ever watch the Truth in 24 movies that Audi put out about 15 years ago now? The first one was 15 years ago. The second was
year
after that.
I did not.
It was a pair of documentaries they did in, I think, 2008 or 9 was the first one, and then 2010 was the second one, about their efforts at the 24 Hours of Le Mans with their prototypes, their LMP1 prototypes. Yeah, you know, if you're into racing, you know, they're actually really great movies. They were produced by NFL Films, really well done, some great cinematography, you know, great storytelling in there. Well, Cadillac last year went back to Le Mans for the first time in 20 years, I think, with their new LMDH car. They did a film too. They made a movie. I made a documentary about it. It's called No Perfect Formula. And there's a trailer that there'll be a link to it in the show notes. And the movie premieres on May 31st. And it's apparently going to be on the Hagerty channel, 1194, on the Samsung TV Plus app, on Samsung smart TVs. It'll also be on Samsung Galaxy devices and on the web. So I'm probably just going to watch it on the web.
You can watch it on their Facebook, on the Hagerty Facebook page.
Okay. Yeah. On the Hagerty Facebook page. There you go.
That's a weird, it's going to be on LG brand refrigerators.
Yeah, you can probably watch it on your Samsung smart fridge, you know, with the big tablet on there.
Just, what are you doing?
If you're into racing, you know, into endurance racing, it's probably going to be worth checking out. I think from the trailer, it looks like, you know, it looks really good. At least, you know, the photography. We'll see how they do with the storytelling, but it's probably worth taking a look at. And It'll be free, so.
So why not? It's free.
Yeah. We've often talked about, you know, it's better to drive a slow car fast than a fast car slow. Well, our friends at TFL have taken this to a new level. They bought a 1971 Fiat Cinquecento. Tommy and Case did a video. They wanted to see if they could get a speeding ticket in a really, really slow car.
Did they do it?
No. they did not manage to get a speeding ticket. Because, you know, I mean, generally, in order to get a speeding ticket, you have to actually exceed the speed limit. You should watch the video. It's pretty entertaining. You know, just accelerating up to 60 miles an hour was, shall we say, an adventure. I'll let you watch.
I'm going to have to watch that to see what happened.
Yeah. And then Motional, which is a company that was formed in 2020 or 2019, is a joint venture between Aptiv, tier one automotive supplier, and Hyundai to develop automated driving systems. Aptiv was already doing the automated driving system development, and they partnered with Hyundai to integrate that with vehicles. And they've been running their robo taxis in Las Vegas for several years, and also testing in other cities like Santa Monica and Singapore and Pittsburgh and Boston. Well, Motional's been running out of money, as is so often the case with mm-hmm. these efforts. They originally put in between Aptiv, their initial contribution, and Hyundai's contribution, it was originally valued at $4 billion, the company, and it was a 50-50 joint venture. And earlier this year, Aptiv said, yeah, we're not going to put any more money into Motional, and we're going to gradually reduce our stake, from 50%. And so Motional was down to a few hundred million dollars at that point, or actually probably even less than that, because apparently they were on track to essentially run out of money about now. Motional managed to get a bridge loan about a month ago to keep them going for a little while negotiations were going on between Hyundai and Aptiv. And they announced that Hyundai is going to be buying most of Aptiv's stake. And so Hyundai will end up owning 85% of the company. They're putting nearly $1 billion, another $1 billion. So half a billion in directly into Motional for new capital, and paying another half a billion to Aptiv for most of their shares. So Aptiv will have a 15% stake. Motional was doing some good work. I've ridden in their cars in Las Vegas. They're currently running a fleet of Ioniq 5s, autonomous Ioniq 5s. Hopefully they'll manage to. They also announced that they're delaying the commercial launch to 2026, reducing some of their spending in the meantime while they work on refining the system and trying to figure out a better business model, which is one of the challenges with this is nobody knows how to actually make any money at this.
Yep.
Just looking at those numbers, that is a crazy amount of money that's being spent.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Look at it, like they spent this much and then they spent this much, and the number just keeps getting progressively bigger, scarier and scarier and scarier.
I went to the Hyundai Motor Group Innovation Center Singapore last year. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And they showed off the car, and they're production ready, like self-driving cars, which no one else really makes those. Everyone buys the car and they just shove all the things on it. These are actually from the little factory there, like ready to go, which is cool. But also, it's like making money off this is, I think I talked about it with the, Tesla's robo taxis. Even if like, say, in 3 years they figure it out, it's like 5-10 years before you make a profit on these. Incredibly expensive.
Even when you're talking about how, when you're saying that earlier, they lost $100,000 a car, it's because they're looking at all the cost of everything that went into it. The cost that goes into this, like in the time that it takes to recoup this kind of cost.
Because you're not selling any, at least with the EVs, like at the end of the day, we're like, well, we have income.
Right.
We have actual revenue coming in with these. It's like, 10 years before you even have any income. And even then it's like nothing. It's mm-hmm. not like, you sold a car.
And this is why this is why Ford, pulled out of Argo AI and they shut down Argo AI, because Ford realized, they've got really good technology, but actually building a business, because, this stuff, it's actually really expensive to run these things, to build these vehicles and to operate them safely, and all the other stuff that they have to do, it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
And they knew that even if they launched it commercially, they would be losing billions of dollars for probably at least through the end of the decade.
Yeah.
And they decided, you know, that's not something we can afford to do with everything else we have to do.
And that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
Right? That's all. You know, and that's, everything that's why, exactly the way it's supposed to go. That's happy. That's the, it all worked out as we planned, gentlemen. That's that case. You know, that's not what's going to happen.
When have things not worked out exactly as planned when we're talking about automated vehicles?
I mean, it's been.
When? I mean, just give me one example.
There's never been a fumble in the entire history of this development.
Everything's worked out. It's always been great.
So totally.
I mean, this is why Alphabet, AKA Google, is like the only people who can still, because they just make a bunch of money. Every time I search something, they're like, woo.
Great. We can pay for some more robo-taxi rides.
We can pay for some more robo-taxis.
Them and Baidu in China.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're basically the Google of China. Yeah, they do all the same stuff in China that Google does everywhere else. And Mobileye, you know, because they're selling a ton of ADAS systems.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, unless you're making a big pot, unless you just have a big, it's like racing.
Yes.
Like, it's like, what's the best, like the fastest
the quickest way to make a small fortune in racing is to start with a large fortune.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the same thing with this. The quickest way to have a small, to have $10 from your, from your self-driving car is to start with $10 billion.
Yeah.
Start that way and you'll eventually lose it all.
Pretty much. Yep. All right. Last item. Last week I went to, a demo day that ZF was putting on up at M1 Concourse. They had a bunch of their cool technologies up there. And I got to sample a bunch of those, which was pretty interesting. Among them was what they called a completely dry brake system. So, you know, brake systems in cars for the, you know, the Model T didn't have hydraulic brakes, but, you know, most stuff, you know, for most of the last century has had hydraulic brakes. So when you press on the brake pedal, it pushes some hydraulic fluid through some pipes and it, you know, clamps your brakes and makes your car stop. Well, ZF, like a bunch of other companies, has been working on electric brakes, where instead of having hydraulic lines, they've just got wires that go to an electric actuator on your brakes. And it applies each of your brakes independently and makes your car stop. And, you know, this is something that back in the early 1990s, when I was still working at GM and they were doing some of the early development on the EV1, they wanted to put electric brakes on the EV1. And, you know, at that time, you know, with the hardware and the compute they had, they figured they didn't think that they could do it and make it safe enough. But now they're doing it. And, you know, this is something that's going to come to production, very soon, from ZF, completely dry brake system with no hydraulic fluid at all.
No more master cylinder?
Nope. But, you know, the funny thing is, you know, I drove it and it felt really surprisingly natural.
Yeah. Really? Oh, that's great. It's always felt like, remember the first like anti-lock brakes?
Oh, yeah.
It was just like fluttering madness.
Yeah.
Did this feel normal? Like, could you tell you were driving anything different? Or if you didn't know, not know?
If I did not know what it was, I would not have guessed that it was, you know, anything out of the ordinary.
Huh.
Cool.
It felt very natural.
That's kind of neat.
The same was also true with the steer-by-wire system that they had on a BMW 5 Series. And this was actually kind of interesting because, you know, so, you know, the Tesla Cybertruck also has steer by wire. So there's no mechanical connection. There's no steering column between the steering wheel and the steering rack that's moving the wheels. But for, you know, for the, you know, with this system I tried from ZF, you know, it's got full redundancy in there. It's got two actuators on there, two independent power supplies, two independent computers, you know, that are running in sync. You know, so tried it out, you know, the first mode, you know, tried it out and it felt completely normal. And then, you know, the engineer that was sitting in the passenger seat, you know, changed a couple of settings and was able to, all of a sudden, you know, I was able to get lots of oversteer and then understeer, and, you know, you could completely manipulate the way the car felt with, just with the software. And it was pretty, pretty interesting. Again, to drive, they've got a force feedback system on the steering wheel, so it's looking at all the sensors, looking at your accelerometers on the car, and the amount of steering angle you're putting in, and your speed, and everything else, and figuring out what how much feedback should we be giving in the steering wheel to simulate what you would be feeling from the wheel, from the actual wheels, in a really good steering system. And it actually felt better than most modern cars that have mechanical steering. Wow. With electric power steering systems. It actually had more feedback that felt more natural than most of those systems.
I remember the i8, it just felt like you're playing a video game.
Yeah. This was not like that.
Cool. As someone who had to bleed the brakes a lot on my dad's 240Z, woohoo. I mean, I haven't bled brakes in a really long time.
I did a lot of brake bleeding when I was an engineer, working on anti-lock brake systems. And yep, exactly.
Oh, there's the ear hole. There's the ear pocket. Oh my God, what a pain in the ass.
They also had some pretty cool stuff that they're doing with electric motors and thermal management of the electric motors and the battery and the electronics. And they've got this propane-based heat pump that they're using. So propane is the cooling medium in the heat pump. And then they've got regular glycol coolant running from the battery and the motor and the power electronics, going through a heat exchanger, heating or cooling the propane that's in this heat pump, and extracting that heat and using that for heating and cooling the vehicle. But they're able to really tightly manage the temperatures on the battery and the motor and the power electronics to keep them in a much tighter range around their optimal temperature for operation and to get the maximum efficiency out of this. And they're claiming they can get about 5 to 10% more efficiency out of an EV using this system.
That's just regular.
Yeah.
Like a regular day. Cause the little article you sent from Motor Trend, it's like 30% at sub freezing temperatures.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, if you can keep the batteries warm, then sub-freezing doesn't mean nothing.
Exactly, yeah. Right. But just, overall, about 5 to 10% improvement in efficiency, which is pretty impressive.
Cool. That's pretty good.
So that's like having 5 to 10% more battery.
Yeah.
So, that'd be cool. Who doesn't want that?
Every 100 miles, you get an extra 5 miles.
Yep. All right.
I figured the math works.
Yeah, that's something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it for this week. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.